Hi friends, it's Jenny. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, Enea Sisters. As you know, Enea Sisters was created to help you discover your true self. How do you do that? Well, a great place to start is with our online quiz. It's free and it only takes about 2 minutes. Even better is joining our sisterhood group coaching. You can do this online or in person. We meet weekly to discuss everything that's going on in your life. Each session is led by myself, Jenny, or another coach. We discuss topics like boundaries, how to succeed in life, marriage, relationships, loneliness, and so much more. Check out the calendar and join today. It is super fun and informative and very cost-effective way to gain great counsel while also becoming part of an amazing community. Thank you again for listening. Welcome, friends, to the Enea Sisters podcast. My name is Jenny, and I have Cassie here.
Hello.
So we are going to end this season talking about the final four types. Earlier on in the season, we talked about the first five. And so now we are going to end with the final four, 6, 7, 8, and 9.
Awesome.
Excited?
Yes.
Yes. So get ready. I know we got a lot of hits and listens on the first time this came around, the first five. Which was quite interesting. I think that people are wanting to know what motivates the types, which is what we do. So we're happy to deal it out.
It's a nice little overview for someone that maybe just wants to dip their toes in the Enneagram to start.
Yeah. Totally, yeah. So we're going to going through motivation, a little bit of the fears, obviously. And then, you know, again, it is a basic overview. If you want more, we would definitely recommend to go back to the individual interviews that we had with specific types. Mm-hmm. The last one that we did was, if you did not listen, Cassie interviewed me, even though I'm not a type 9, so that one's fun and interesting, but it still gives huge insights into what a type 9 kind of looks like.
Right.
Yeah, so we had fun with that. Okay, so we're going to start with type 6, and 6s are known as the loyalist. They are pretty much desiring security, comfort, support. That is what they crave. That is what they are motivated by. And they are going to, on the flip side, be fearful of anything that doesn't look like that, okay? So anything that is providing uncomfort, insecurity, anything that is trying to squash on their safety.
Right.
So they love being around people who support them, who guide them in the right ways, coming from their own insight and knowledge. And yeah, that's the 6 in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add? I mean, we'll talk a little bit more, but is there anything else you would add about a 6 that you know?
I would just say, like, the most interesting thing to me about the 6 is that they're the only one that has that inner committee, which I think makes them very unique, and that's very fascinating to me. Yeah. So
for sure. So what Cass is talking about is, like the one with the inner critic, they have an inner committee. So they have, I don't know, 4 to 6 people that are talking in their heads about what they should or shouldn't do, which is fascinating and so real for a 6.
Yeah. And if you go back and listen to the episode of 6 when we talked to Rachel, she kind of talked about how she's learned to embrace that. Mm-hmm. And when she's, you know, doing the dishes or whatever, just keeping space for quiet so she can just kind of let her committee do some talking.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Embracing what is foreign and scary is pretty much a good lesson for all of us.
Right.
But definitely for the 6. And, you know, we have those fight, flight, and freeze responses for a reason. It is the reason why we definitely encourage boundaries. But boundaries are good in their spaces, not all the time. So we don't want boundaries around everything.
Right.
We want to be able to walk into spaces that actually could be safe and could be secure. And I think it is important for the 6 to flesh those out.
Right.
So when 6s are moving in disintegration, they are moving towards the competitive 3. So this is when we see a 6 getting defensive. Defensive about their territory, defensive about who they are, what they want to be, who they're about. This is when we'll see a 6 being aggressive, which is kind of foreign to who they are. Mm-hmm. This is pure disintegration. Mm-hmm. Total 3. I do think that they can get to the high side of 3 and become a little more courageous, but that's for another podcast because we're mostly going to talk about the atypical Arrows of Disintegration and Integration.
I think we did talk about it a little bit in the sixth episode. The counter six is more of that.
The counter six. So there's a lot of different theories on the counter six. So there are three subtypes to every type, and we're not going to go into them in detail, but just so you know, as the listener, there's the sexual, there's the social, and there's the self-preserving. So the counter six, which is the social six, I believe. In the past, we've talked about the counter six a lot. New theories believe that there isn't really a counter six. There's just three subtypes.
Okay.
So the counter, if we're going to call it a counter, would probably be the social. It would be the one that is more embracing of the three and more embracing of the higher side when they
and they kind of put themselves in those fearful situations right purposefully.
Exactly.
Is, very fascinating.
To kind of test the boundaries.
Right.
And, they don't seem safe all of the time because they are more of that social.
Right.
Yeah. So then when they're in integration, they are heading towards nine. They are more relaxed and optimistic, so they aren't giving into what we would call worst-case scenario thinking. It's funny, not really funny, but interesting when I think about the worst-case scenario. When I first started studying the Enneagram years ago, I remember interviewing sixes, and my sister's a six. I know a lot of sixes. They're the most common type of all the types. And they started talking about the worst-case scenario. And when I think of worst case scenario, it's like, yeah, I mean, someday if I happen to be near a train and like I accidentally don't see the stop sign and I go over it, I might get hit. That's very unlikely though. So I'm probably not going to think about that.
Right.
That was kind of my idea of worst case scenario. And then when I heard sixes talk about it, it was like on the hour, sometimes minute, daily, they have these worst case scenarios like, I'm driving my kids to school. We're probably going to get in an accident. I mean, just the fact that they say probably is like beyond me, you know, but it's so real to them that these situations could occur and they're constantly talking themselves out of them and giving themselves advice on what they would do in these situations.
And that's part of the committee, I assume, is these voices that are, no, you're really okay. That you, I remember you locked the front door before you went to bed. Those
And on the flip side of like the worst case scenario being tragic in that way, it can be helpful to them, especially if they are assisting, you know, a boss or trying to plan a meeting or even trying to plan a vacation or something. All of those, you know, that worst case scenario thinking can be helpful in not doing the things that maybe another type would have done because they didn't think through everything.
Right.
And that's something I think sixes are really proud of because it does help them plan accordingly and adjust accordingly to be the best, you know, employee, parent, whatever role you want to put there. So. Yeah, definitely positive thinking. So moving on to type sevens, the most positive reframers of them all. We know sevens of having just the goal of having fun, right? They want to be satisfied. Now, satisfied and contentment might not always be fun. It could be just eating their favorite dessert. You know, it could be being with their favorite people. But it does surround the word satisfaction. Okay, so whatever that looks like for you as a seven, or the type seven that you know, it's going to be satisfaction. They have a complete FOMO though. So this is going to be more of their disintegrating patterns, but you know, we know their fear surrounds being deprived. Hashtag FOMO, avoid of pain, all of those things. You know sevens?
Oh yeah, my oldest sister is a seven, and she's a lot of fun.
They're social butterflies. Everybody wants to be them. Everybody wants to know them.
She's also that person, like, anytime I see a funny video or, you know, like a funny TikTok, she's the person I have to send it to because she's going to appreciate it the most.
See, another great way to use the Enneagram. I love it. So my son's a seven. We think, you know, we often advise not to type your children unless they are your own, and also internally typing them, not externally, because we don't want you to mistype them.
mm-hmm. and then they have, you know, some kind of traumatic result because they find out there's some other number.
Right.
But I know that my son is a 7, and it's hilarious. Like, he is the most popular kid at school. Everyone loves him. Multiple girls want to be his girlfriend, which we don't allow the kids to date. And it's just hilarious how he arrives in the world thinking that things will just occur and happen his way no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And if he gets a bad grade, somehow he can reframe it and it isn't actually a bad grade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, it's hilarious from my point of view as mm-hmm. a parent.
But another thing I appreciate about my sister as a 7 is, you know, because they are mostly focused on having fun.
Uh-huh.
And as a person who can sometimes get caught up in feelings.
Yes.
If I go to my oldest sister, she'll say, okay, you have 5 minutes to vent and then we're having fun. You know, she gives me a time limit.
She's like,
I will listen, but there is a limit to this. And
See?
Then we're going to go have fun.
Balance.
Yep.
I love that she listens though.
Yeah.
She didn't like trump over or roll over your feelings.
Right.
She listened even though she's feelings repressed, mm-hmm. which is a 7 thing. She approached that with love and then moved on to the fun stuff.
Yeah.
Great.
Exactly.
A very healthy 7 there. So in disintegration, when they are stressed, they are going to act like a detached 5. So they're going to withdraw. They're going to be very scattered and hyperactive. They're going to not really, well, of course they're not going to be themselves, but they're going to be a little bit more, sorry. I am so, backtrack. They go to 5 when they're actually in strength. So backtrack everything that I just said. In stress, they're going to 1. So they're going to be more critical, more mm-hmm. black and white thinking, more
yes.
pessimistic. They're going to start seeing the world as not half full or even like overflowing, which mm-hmm. is their norm. So it's pretty easy to spot a 7 in disintegration because mm-hmm. they're not the life of the party anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're now handing out the rule books.
Mm-hmm.
When they are in integration, they are headed in 5. And although this does still look like withdraw, it's a good withdraw for a 7. Because for a 7, instead of just kind of going, they're slowing down. They're actually thinking about what they're doing. They're still in a great space of contentment and really glass half full, all of those things, but they are now more contemplative about those things. They are more focused and fascinated mm-hmm. into those things mm-hmm. instead of just kind of flying into them, right? Any questions? We're good?
No.
Okay, yeah. So I love seeing a 7 and 5 because they're settled. You know, a lot of times when I see my son here, he's like doing Legos, which he loves,
mm-hmm.
but he's slowly, like analytically, like looking at how he can create a guitar out of nothing,
mm-hmm.
just from his own mind with Legos, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he does create really amazing things when he's in 5.
Mm-hmm.
It is quite amazing. He's an artist, so I see these masterpieces happen from his mind when he is settled in 5 space. And that is what we love about 7s.
Yeah.
Moving on to 8s. 8s are those self-confident, courageous types. Very assertive. 7s are assertive too. They are in that assertive triad. But 8s are assertive in a whole nother way. They fear being controlled by other people. And so to protect themselves, they desire to control their own lives. So oftentimes when we see an 8 disintegrating or just acting out in average space, we see them wanting control of whatever's going on for them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care what you're doing, unlike some of the other types, like a 1. 1 wants control of everything. They want control of them, their environment, everybody else. Like, we should all do the same thing, love the same thing, believe the same thing. 8s, they don't care about that. They care about themselves. So don't try to control an 8 or a bear will come out and attack you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Again, you know the space.
With typing our children, but I'm pretty confident that my oldest daughter is an 8. And yes, I definitely see that. That she definitely pushes back if you try to, she feels out of control and feels the control in you, which is a struggle as
yeah.
a parent,
yes.
having a child that doesn't like to be controlled.
Totally. You know, they want to be very self-reliant.
Yes.
And they see weakness as a fault. Mm-hmm. Which does them a disservice for sure, because they have so many strengths, like resiliency, all those beautiful things, courageous, mm-hmm. But then allowing themselves to avoid vulnerability at all cost, mm-hmm. it just strips them away from all of that beautiful side of like what we love when they're on their high side. Mm-hmm. So from disintegration, when they're secretive and fearful at five, so opposite of sevens, eights go to fives in disintegration. So they are fearful in that space. They are holding on to everything they know. They're controlling all parts of themselves. They're not allowing anybody in. It's them against the world kind of situation that we have going on. And it's a place of fear. Mm-hmm. So as we know, five, six, and sevens, they're in the fear triad. So that's where they go. They go to five, they go to fear, they stay in fear until they are ready to come out of it. And don't even try to get them out of it unless you want the bear, like mm-hmm. I said.
Right.
However, when they choose to come out of it, it is through the truth, the real story that's going on, right? Mm-hmm. And when they become more integrated, they're going into those healthy, caring twos. They become mm-hmm. more open-hearted. I mean, this is when you see an eight cry, which mm-hmm. is not going to happen very often. If you've hugged an eight or you've seen an eight cry, mm-hmm. you better take a picture because it's not going to happen again. Like, this is few and far between these moments. But when they do, you know that an eight is an integration. It is into. It is understanding that this repressed feelings person is coming into their own feelings and letting you see them. Mm-hmm. Letting you see them for who they are. Letting you see their feelings. Exposing themselves in the biggest and brightest way so that they can be a part of you relationally.
Mm-hmm. Right.
My husband's an eight. We've talked about that before on this podcast. And I know all these parts very well. Mm-hmm. When he is in integration and he allows, which he has quite often in the past few years, others to see him cry, others to see him vocally speak on hurt, mm-hmm. it is the most beautiful, magical thing, because it not only allows him to grow, but it allows everyone around him, because it's such a power move coming from an eight.
Right.
So yeah, I think that is an eight rolled into a little bit of space here. Moving on to nine, very fresh in our minds. The nine is the peacemaker. Oh, I forgot to say the eight is the challenger.
Mm-hmm. Motivation.
Yeah, the motivation of an eight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the motivation of an eight. They're avoiding vulnerability. They are. They're motivated by keeping that lack of pain, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want pain, so they're just kind of protecting whatever that is. Mm-hmm. So that's the eight. Moving on to the nine, the peacemaker. So similar to the eight, the nine, though, is avoiding conflict. Mm-hmm. Avoiding conflict is not the same as avoiding vulnerability. Mm-hmm. So let's just put that out there. Nines are avoiding conflict, which is an inaction. Creating peace is an action. Mm-hmm. That's the difference.
Okay.
So we want to be actionable people. Mm-hmm. As nines, the avoidance of conflict happens because they are fearing loss or separation. Mm-hmm. So that comes from a fear. We talk about nature, nurture, culture all the time. Somehow in between those lines, the fear of loss occurred. The fear of separation of something they loved occurred. Mm-hmm. And so they've created these boundaries around that by avoiding conflict.
Mm-hmm. So which probably at the bottom line of it is just the loss of peace.
Yes.
Is what.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that serenity, mm-hmm. which is a one I totally understand. Like completely submitting yourself to serenity mm-hmm. is the best place, but it takes a lot of hard work to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So for the nine, they are, they're desiring the peace, but they're doing it by avoiding conflict, which is not obtaining peace.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In fact, we know that it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. So when they are disintegrating, they are going into the worried, anxious six. They're going deep into thinking. So we started this podcast there. We're going to end it there. Mm-hmm. They are now in the deepest trenches of worst case scenario, I will never achieve peace moments. Mm-hmm. And
ironically... it's because they're avoiding conflict
yes.
is the reason that they're in
yes.
this place of of not having peace.
Yeah.
Because they're just left to their own devices and their own thoughts.
Exactly. I think about, this could be true for eights too, so I don't want to confuse the listener, but I think about, you know, the Star Wars trilogy with Anakin, the first three episodes where he's a little boy and he's so cute. Oh, Anakin. And then he falls in love. And then he gets into the turmoil, the inner turmoil of him losing what he loves the most, right? And instead of communicating and doing all the things we know to try to create peace and actually avoid conflict, he goes into himself and eventually becomes Darth Vader. For those of you who didn't know, sorry, spoiler alert, Anakin becomes Darth Vader. So what's sad is exactly what you just said. The one thing he's trying to fight is the thing that he gives into and eventually loses.
Right.
So we don't want to become Darth Vader. And so by preventing that, we're going to go into integration. And for a nine, what that looks like is to become a self-developing energetic three. So a nine and three space is the peacemaker. It is the person that is seeing all the types for who they are. It is the person who is communicating, bringing people together.
I would imagine they are probably the best communicators.
Yeah.
Because they know how to express conflict and communicate in a way that still keeps peace somewhat.
Yeah.
So they're probably who we should be learning from in best communication is the nine in integration.
Right, right, exactly. And we talked about this before. I mean, saying it's hard to find a type that's integrated is doing them a disservice. I think that there are probably millions of nine integrated types out there. In fact, if you're a nine, you're going to have, you know, waves of integration and disintegration like all of us, right? So I do know, though, that Suzanne Stabile, who I love, who is the Enneagram godmother, her husband, who is a pastor of, I believe, a Methodist church. Don't quote me on that, but he's definitely a pastor, former priest, and he knows the Enneagram, uses the Enneagram. What I know and have heard of him is the power of the way that he uses his faith and obviously tools like the Enneagram. He is connecting people. He is helping people heal. He is allowing people to see themselves for who they really are, which is a gift, right? It's a gift from God. And we all have those gifts, and we all can be integrated versions of ourselves. That's the point. That's why we're doing what we're doing, right?
Right.
So those are the final four. Is there anything you want to add about these four types?
Not that I can think of.
It's been such a fun journey. This season has been all about really digging deep, interviewing real people who are all of the nine types, and finding out ways we can see ourselves in those types so that we can discover our best self.
Yes.
So hopefully you enjoyed this season, and we look forward to having you listen on our next season. So it is the holiday, so enjoy the season. Enjoy this if you're listening at another time, and thank you for listening. Cheers.